Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
We are back, baby. This is Office Hours with your good brother, Professor Carl Tom Jones. And we're coming to you live from North Philadelphia. The city of brotherly love, on FetLifeStation.com, FetLifeStation.com. I want to thank you all for tuning in on Philly Friday. But I definitely want to send an extended shout out to our family in the Big Apple, especially at Mecca Evers College in Brooklyn. Very interesting story that I have about my experiences at Mecca Evers College. But first and foremost, let's get to it. It is currently 1 minute before the hour. And the weather here is a beautiful, beautiful 83 degrees. There's a light summer breeze blowing. The weather today has been immaculate. Couldn't ask for better weather. But like I said, for those of you who don't know, I do have a film that I executively produced titled The Independence Day Project. And it's a documentary that asks two very simple questions. What does a black community free of white supremacy look like to you? And what do we need to do to build it? It debuted in Harlem, literally two blocks from the Apollo, in 2018. But why am I bringing up Mecca Evers College? Because some of the most important clips from the film were recorded in one of the classrooms at Mecca Evers College in Brooklyn. So shout out to all the family up there at Mecca Evers College and everybody that's tuning in tonight. Hit up the chat board. Let us know you're listening. Shout out where you're from. And we're going to get to it. And as y'all know, I like to start off with current events, things that are going on in the news. So, one of the things I want to talk about is some of the fallout that occurred from the Alabama River Brawl. And those of you who don't know, a few weeks ago, some white Alabama natives effed around on a pier and found out. And the ass whipping caught around the world. Oh, man, my mind. We had some new names coming out of that one. Don't be new superheroes, right? The young 16 brother that swam across off the riverboat and onto the pier to help out his elder is down being, you know, referred to as Aquaman. Not Aquaman, but Aquaman. And also, the man that was leading the board, affectionately known now as Chairman. The Chairman. Let's make sure we get some money up so they can have an adequate defense. I understand the Chairman has received the disorderly conduct charge. So, you know, from what I understand, he started off, you know, utilizing that chair, offering people a seat, you know, and then, you know, chair had a mind of his own, allegedly. But there was a song that was playing prior to that, came out a few months ago, but nobody really knew about the song. But the song was rising on country western charts. And the song was titled "Try That in a Small Town" by Jason Aldean. And when you look at the video, it was referring to a lot of things that happened in the inner city. It was referring to a lot of the action that took place on the streets throughout the country in 2020. In regards to the George Floyd protest. And it sort of made the inclination that, you know, urban folk are only comfortable when they operate in places where they actually have the numbers. So the song speaks to good old boys utilizing their Second Amendment rights to protect and preserve the order of this particular great nation, and to do so in a patriotic fashion. I mean, there was so many references. The firearms, the American flag, just, you know, just blowing in the breeze. But after the melee that took place on that pier in Montgomery, Alabama, what happened next was that song that was actually at the top of the charts immediately fell out of the top 20 and off rotation in major major streaming services. So, you know, I found that a laughy hiss. Because like I said, they effed around. They effed around and found out. So That was the only current event that occurred this week. You know, apparently, Usher Raymond came out with a song recently entitled Boyfriend. And in this particular video, the video that he shot, it featured no one else but recently made infamous Keke Palmer. As it showcased her throughout the video, and you know, Usher did a scene with without a shirt on, and you know, it spoke to, it referenced the concert in which drew all of the controversy concerning her and the father of her child, Darius Jackson, in which they engaged in a Twitter feed back and forth that was fueled by many of the fans of Keke Palmer. And, you know, you had a sliver of men who thought it was offensive, her behavior. So the video referenced that. And in a humiliating way, too, I might add. So, you know, and I'm going to, you know, hold on, because I don't think y'all ready for this part. So yeah, try to be a little dramatic, you know. Try dramatic to do a few things, but yeah. So it apparently seems to be the last straw. Various news outlets are reporting that allegedly Darius has severed ties with Keke Palmer and is now filing for full custody of his son. There are also reports stating that there might be some issues concerning who may be seeking ownership of the home. So, of course, there's a lot of angry women right now saying that Darius is doing way too much and that as a man, you should never, never, ever, ever hit a woman up for her pockets in a situation like this. Now, I'm looking at Darius because at some point, Darius had to be like,
what more do you want from me?
In regards to this particular situation. See, Darius had to put up with a lot of public humiliation concerning that particular episode. And I was even joking about the fact that if he does get full custody, maybe Usher should chip in. But then I was quickly reminded by a friend on Facebook that Usher's already married. So while Keke Palmer is basking in all of this, you know, attention, pretty much is doing this for the affection, for what it seems, of her own publicity, but also for the affection of a kept man. Usher's already chosen. Which I think is even more foul of violation because, yes, he's a performer, but and they're celebrities, but kind of, you know, disrespectful to his marriage. But if he doesn't respect his marriage, I don't think, maybe she don't see the need to respect it either. So, Why am I bringing that part up again? It's because we see it we see the misandry involved in all of this. And for those who don't know what the term misandry is, misandry is the hatred of men, the hatred of males. And it's similar to when one would say, for ladies, the term misogyny. And if you operate in a misogyny, a matter of misogyny, basically it's displaying your hatred for women. Well, that's the same thing. Misandry means for men. And we particularly have a strong case of anti-black male misandry that is existing and currently going on in our community. Now, as many of you know, I'm a black nationalist. I believe that if you're going to have a thriving community, you have to do so from a nationalistic perspective. And specifically when you consider the black experience in America. See, unlike many cultures, the black experience in America is different. Black people in general, and I'm not talking about those who came before Columbus, but I'm talking about black people in general, were transported to this country against their will. There was never a designated area for which black people would be offered autonomy. There was never a time and space in this country where black people were actually built into the fabric of what we know as the Constitution that derived from the earlier thought processes of the need for a Declaration of Independence. These are facts. In fact, when it was actually considered in regards to black people in particular, black men in particular, to become citizens in this country, it was deemed that they would only be worth 3/5 of a man, and that was only done so that the South can maintain political power in regards to congressional seats after America became America, the United States, that is. So there was never a space and time in this country, even with the Emancipation Proclamation, it didn't offer any liberation to black people other than the fact that you can be free from your shackles. And what many don't know is many Native American tribes still maintained and held on to their African slaves well into the 1870s. I bring this up to say that this is not a natural place for black people. We didn't have land ownership in America. There's no states dedicated to black people to build in this country. So the experience is kind of like, you know, being behind enemy lines at all times. And so because you're locked in behind enemy lines, you have bits and pieces of your culture. But basically you're drawing your folkways and your mores and your cultural norm from the dominant culture that's in power. So that in itself created a power vacuum in the black community in terms of who would be in charge, who would control the dynamics of day-to-day functioning, and establishing a balance of relationship between the male and female gender. Therefore, specifically, I mean, this particular relationship started on the plantations. And I think somebody really needs to do some checking out because Judge Doe Brown had revealed in one of his interviews that he, as an intern, in the 50s, he had to go to the Library of Congress. And he was assigned to do research on, you know, why the black community was never able to actually, in America at least, mount an effective rebellion revolution that would actually generate a space or a free space or a space that was declared for black people. And one of the things he noticed was that on plantations, one of the things that was quickly discovered is that if the men, strong men, even the ones who were buck broken, if they stayed on the plantation with their sons, that they were more likely to raise a son that would rebel against the system, that would rebel against enslavement, that would rebel against his bondage. They also understood that if they removed the men, strong male leadership, and displaced them all over the South, and if they done so and allowed the woman to raise sons, that the sons would become more submissive, more agreeable, and more or less likely to buck up against the system. This would also be enforced or reinforced by the mothers, because their mothers, fearing for the safeties of their children, specifically their sons, knew that if their son was rebellious, he would be killed. As an example to the rest of the plantation. So they would emasculate their boys. And when they emasculated the boys, they created a generation of males who were submissive to other men. See, we often talk about the plight of the black community, and we give a lot of grace to the women who revel in their masculine energy, who state that they just need a man to take over that masculine role so that they can bask in feminine energy. We give a lot of grace for that. But somehow, some way, the males that came up in this particular society under these particular constraints are supposed to just be men one day. No therapy, no research, no studies, no rites of passage. Nobody teaches them, because black men are the greatest threat to the institution of white supremacy anywhere on the planet. In America, Africa, they're ground zero in terms of the establishment of the institutional white supremacy. So, as we move further along, this relationship became more institutional, more official. It became more formal between the matriarch of the black community and said patriarch of the dominant society, aka white community. And we started to see policy come into play, specifically during and after the civil rights movement, and even prior to, honestly. Because after the Civil War was fought and won by the North, even though some would question that, you still had monuments. Oh, excuse me, I'll get to that in a second. You still had policy put in place to continue to subjugate black men. One, in 1866, you saw a dramatic increase in black imprisonment, where the prison industrial complex went from being 90% white male to 90% black male in 1 year. That's right. And that's how you got the, you know, as it swung around and closer to the 20th century, start to see the implementation of policies come into play. Right? Although the official start of Jim Crow was the Plessy versus Ferguson court case that took place in Kansas back in 1896, that was credited with the official beginning of Jim Crow, the Jim Crow era, because that was the ruling, separate from equal ruling that was displayed. What happened after that and prior to that were the laws and policies that were put into place called vagrancy laws. These laws were generated and created to maintain structural order by stating that if you are a black man and you are homeless or unemployed or simply walking around without ID, you can be placed into jail. And back then, you didn't have big prisons. Philadelphia was one of the first cities to actually have a state correctional facility. Actually housed Al Capone. But that's where you get Sam Cooke's song, The Sound of the Man Working on the Chain Gang. Because in the South, and Sam Cooke was from Alabama, you heard the men building, the prisoners building the freaking railroad system that the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts and everybody in this country had gotten credit for in terms of establishing the Industrial Revolution. Hold on, Trip. They don't call me professor for a reason. I got some lessons for you. Every week you need to get out a notepad and get your pen rocking. Every week. Classes in session. So I talk about this because I'm talking about the consistent effort this country has made to stabilize and to eliminate any competition that black men, even in the rules, if you put black men next to white men, get black men nothing, black men still will build if you don't impede. The proof is in the pudding. Rosewood, Florida. Edinburgh, Florida. We already know about Tulsa. Slocum, Texas. East St. Louis, Illinois. Hyattsville, Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia. Hell. South Central Los Angeles. Central Avenue was a haven for black prosperity. Lehigh Avenue, North Philadelphia. Seneca Park, New York. Which is now Central Park, New York. Chicago, Illinois. All these cities I'm talking about were founded by black men. And if we didn't found the city, we definitely had locked in an economic program, social economic program, that led to stability for those black communities until they were destroyed. I am so tired of hearing that black men can't compete with other men in the world. When black men were routinely sabotaged, everything we put together was sabotaged. You have entire a string of towns in South Carolina that are underwater that were generated by black men. Underwater. Dams were built so that these towns would flood. Whole infrastructures, traffic-wise, were generated so that nobody would have to drive through the black towns and to support them economically. Now, did we have something to do with that? Yeah, let's take accountability. We all came up when desegregation occurred. Brown versus the Board of Education. And we decided that the white man's water was wetter, the white man's ice was colder. So we started bypassing black business. That's on us. But we also understood something else too. The epigenetic reminder of fear of what happens when black people build. What made Tulsa, Oklahoma so fascinating the most is because the government were the ones dropping bombs on its own so-called citizens. Sticks of dynamite and crop dusters. State militias brought in. And everybody black wasn't even fighting that. You had a handful of brothers that got the high ground and was whooping ass. These brothers were valiant. These brothers were brave. And we need to start putting more respect on their names. They did so because black people at that time had a higher spiritual faith. And even if you want to call it Christianity, black people had a relationship with God. Black men weren't taught to be on demon time. Black men called their uprising, rising tide against the devil. Let's not forget that. Ben Marvesi created an entire church, a Methodist Baptist church, down there. In Charleston, South Carolina. And at that particular time, you had government militia get in place to thwart that uprising. And if you want to go off this particular continent to the Caribbean, the Haitian Revolution wasn't just black people tired. Black people were on a mission from God. You don't believe? Do a Google search of Bookman's Prayer. Learn who Cecilia Fatima was. See, and I'm talking about all these things. It's all going to make a lot more sense in a little bit. I know a lot of y'all right now are sitting like, yo, Professor, where is this going? The pact, the betrayal of the community, where black women developed a relationship with the government. And these welfare policies maintaining a relationship with the state over a relationship with their men. Let's get one thing out the gate. If anybody's ever seen the movie Claw Deep, then you'll understand what I mean. When a social worker would make house calls and come to the house and catalog everything that's in the house to see if anything new's been purchased to determine the amount of benefits the state is going to provide to that particular family. The biggest deterrent for all those was an addition of a man. So, not having a man in the house that you got for food stamps, that you got more, you know, discounted bills, got a bigger check from the state. Now, keep in mind, you did not have to, at that particular time, deny your man. White women kept their men, since we like to compare the genders. And therefore, once they received enough government access and enough government services, they discontinued for the most part. Because you got some states right now, like Kentucky, West Virginia, and Tennessee, and Mississippi and Alabama, which has a lot of white folk on welfare. But for the most part, when they received enough benefits to get their family together, they got off the system. Now, I'm not saying that to say that white folk got where they got society out the mud. No, we live in a system of white supremacy. It's designed to give white folk every chance they get, provide every safety net they can have. So by no means am I making a story or making this argument based on meritocracy. But what I am saying is they chose to build and maintain relationships and build with their men. In the black community, that didn't happen. And so, because that didn't happen, black women were given a certain level of autonomy in the black community. Through those same systems, through those same policy programs, and it earned them certain positions so you can get scholarships to go to college, which was always a woman's thing because the men did the work, the trade work. The men did the work in the field. The men did the building. The men were using their hands, tools. The women were always sent to school. Most colleges in the North particularly started off as teachers' colleges or nursing colleges. They were primarily for women. It wasn't until the technical schools came through HBCUs mostly that the men started actually going to school. But I bring this up because it put women in a position to change classes. And so socioeconomic class shift changed, you know, post-civil rights era, the Civil Rights Bill. And so throughout the 70s, you start to see a mass influx into the professional world from black women. Now, while they didn't make a lot of money, they did have the esteemed, you know, label of being a white-collar worker, in which pretty much established sort of a classism over the blue-collar brothers that were doing all the work. So even though the city couldn't survive without those who picked up your garbage, those who repaired potholes in your trees, those who put up streetlights, those who actually paved and built the buildings that you walked in and lived in and operated out of, those who put together all the furniture that you sat your behind on, this, that, and the other, they were still looked at in a disgraceful way. And it created a dichotomy. So what is the gynocracy? The gynocracy is the relationship that women in our community, the black community, we're speaking specifically about that tonight, partnered up with the state to maintain a matriarchal rule or a matriarchal rule over their community. That means a woman is the last straw, the woman is the authority. And those of you who have grown up in a black family understands what that means. If you need and if you want to know how that works, just on the lowest levels, look at what we talked about last week with Terrence Bud Crawford, all right, super welterweight champion, and his upbringing with his mother, for which he was verbally abusive, not just verbally, but spiritually and emotionally abusive. She abandoned him spiritually. She never told him she loved him. And it wasn't until he became a millionaire boxer that all of a sudden this affection for him tore it out. Now, I don't know what issues she may have had, but we always deal with issues that we always give grace to how the woman got that way. We still don't know the end result of what's going to be with Terrence Crawford. Right now, he's at the top of the world. A lot easier to deal with these traumas. But when you're alone in the dark and the spotlight is no longer on, and you're left with your thoughts and the absence of all the things that should have made you whole, specifically being robbed of the first love that a man's supposed to have. His first love is his mother. Like a girl, her first love is her father. We look at that from the perspective, and we have to understand that that is the relationship. And sometimes it's more egregious, sometimes it's not, but that's the relationship. And black men are taught that you're supposed to suffer in silence, and that it's okay to be abused in your community. That not only is okay, this is a cultural normalcy. And I'm just going to give you a few examples, because we started off the show talking about, Kiki Palmer and her breakup with Darius Jackson, and how many women that took fun and humiliated her, as long as some emasculated males, right? I'm not going to let you dudes off the hook either, right? Just a quick note, too. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to something I said earlier. Just a quick note. Jason Alden, right? We talked about his try it in a small town. Y'all don't know. Remember back in the Vegas shooting in 2017 when Stephen Craig Pollock killed 59 people at a concert as he was standing on, I believe, the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas? I remember when that building was being built. I used to walk through it when I was out there. Yeah, well, that occurred during Jason Alden concert. So, even through all that, he's still with his white supremacist ways, trying to find a way to blame black folk for all the violence in America. I just wanted to bring that back. But let's get back to the Kiki Palmer part. It has become customarily routine that black men are the butt of every joke, every emasculated joke in our community. Not even just the emasculated jokes, right? About not being, ain't sugar and honey iced tea. I'm trying to watch the plane because that's through our conversion over here. Not sugar, honey, iced tea. To being deadbeat dads, which several major government agencies identified that as a falsehood. Black men are the most involved men in any child's family of any demographic in terms of the lives of their children. Black men are also the number one sponsors of child support, right? And before we get to that part, just remember something. How toxic Terrence Crawford's mother was. His mother was. Do you think any man would stick around throughout that type of toxicity? And I've seen it firsthand. If a woman is that toxic, she can possibly end that man's life. So sometimes they have to abandon their family in order to save their lives. Now, I know some of you might think that's cowardly or whatever, but what other alternatives that you have? We're going to get to that in a minute, because there is another alternative. But, so we talk about that. We talk about the fact that sisterhood loves celebrating the embarrassment of black men. Now, whenever you see a black man that leaves a sister publicly speaking, T-Torner has an affair. All of a sudden, he's the scum of the earth. All right? And he doesn't even get brother support in his booth, to be honest with you, because we like to hold men accountable most of the time. I'm not saying all the time, but most of the time, we hold men accountable for doing foul stuff. We definitely don't support him. And we definitely don't celebrate. Remember when Kevin Samuels died? No matter how you felt about that man, we realized the response to Kevin Samuels dying, all the celebrations, the parties that were put together, and those little parties put together for Kevin Samuels dying. That wasn't really about Kevin Samuels. That was the contempt that our women had towards black men. You just didn't think we understood what it was. Then you have the breakups, the public breakups, right? You had Devon Franklin, who was an ordained minister, still an ordained minister, who actually broke up with Megan Good. But when he broke up with Megan Good, he was called gay. I don't understand his fascination with calling men gay. But he was called gay because apparently she was too ratchet in her lifestyle, things she liked to do. She was out there a little bit. And similar to Kiki Palmer, Megan likes showing skin, right? And she's currently with another brother, I forget the brother's name, from Creed movie, who was going through a little something, but she's currently with him right now, so I hope he just knows what he's dealing with. To him out. Corey Hart has been nothing but a stand-up man. Nobody, you know, can say anything publicly about the man. And women, people literally went into looking up his dirt, trying to find dirt on him, trying to make rumors, create rumors of him cheating on her. And then basically stating that, you know, she basically just left him because he was a deadbeat, she was paying all the bills. Which is not true at all, from what I understand. What I understand, he was, you know, he's not broke. Now, you can call $2 million broke, but I don't know where $2 million is broke for anything. So I think he had an estimated value between $2 and $4 million. I could be wrong, but it was in the million. You had Lori Harvey, who sabotaged her relationship with Michael B. Jordan. Yet and still, she's out there doing mean, you know, leaving girl, this, that, the other on Instagram and Twitter. And women all bashing and making fun of Michael B. Jordan. Then you have you know, this is like the creme de la creme. Jada Pinkett Smith and Ciara. They are Will, because they're dealing with Will Smith and Russell Wilson. And when you talk to women and they say, what are the qualifications a man needs to have on his checklist, typically thinking he has to be a masculine man, he has to be an alpha male, he has to be 6 feet tall, he has to do all these different things. Well, Russell Wilson may not be 6 feet tall. He's definitely an alpha man. In some aspects, because he led a league, led a team of men to multiple championship game appearances and even won a Super Bowl. You don't do that if you're not an alpha male, because men do not follow betas. They don't go to war for betas. And Will Smith was everybody's man of the year, calendar year, father of the year, all these different things. You know? As we see my, got a chart here. So, take all those things into consideration, and all the different types of humiliating things that women celebrate. Celebrate Tierra twerking every chance she got, putting out whole songs about single women. You don't need a man, even though she's married to one of the most eligible bastards in the country. If he was single, and then we get to the part of what a real man is. See, because women are the only ones in our community that can outgrow a relationship. As I mentioned before, when a man says he's no longer interested in a relationship in our community, he is dull because, you know, he didn't stick with the one who got him there. He left it ass for a white girl. Isn't that what they say about Kanye West? But our women can do it all the time. Nobody's saying that about Serena Williams. Nobody's saying that about the rapper Eve. Nobody's saying those things. They graduated. They outgrew the men that they were with. No accountability to the Listen, the people in those relationships, I'm not saying they have to be accountable for anything. They just happen to live in those relationships. Except for the, you know, Tia Maravis and the Lori Harvey, who are out there publicly trying to humiliate their men, and also the Kiki Palmers of the world. But other than that, those other people, they're entitled to their relationships. They're entitled to move how they move. No arguments here. But they never get redirected for bad behavior. Meg Thee Stallion was recently celebrating Tory Lanez going to jail for 10 years. And if he shot in the foot, you know, so be it. They're so sketchy with that case right now. We just don't know what's going on. But prior to that, Meg Thee Stallion made a classic, a hit. Not classic, but a hit. Right? And she teamed up with, oh, right now I'm having a brain fog right now. And plus, I don't follow a lot of people. So, but it'll come to me in a second. But and she teamed up to make the song, you know, WAP, right? We all know, wet ass, you know what? So she had an interview with who was considered like the matriarch of America for black people at this particular time. The standard. All right? The load bearer, Maxine Waters. All right? Congresswoman Maxine Waters out of Los Angeles. And when the song came up in the interview, you could see Meg cringing because she anticipated a tongue lashing, at least some type of reprimand for being in that position. The Maxine Waters looked straight, looked the script, and told Megan how empowered she felt by this display of sexual liberation, and how it made them feel proud to be a black woman in this particular day. So the song that Megan Stallion and Cardi B put out there, which led to another song that was even more features later on, but it created something. When you say, what are the standards of the community? So it's constantly come up. Is that the ladies have been saying, well, we would operate in our femininity when proper leadership is restored. In other words, when a man leads properly, the women will naturally fall in line. Then I started thinking about that for a second. Because first I was a little offended, and I probably still am, but at least now I gave some thought. I said, could they be right? Perhaps black men are not leading properly. So, because we constantly see these memes that are shared and going viral about what real men are supposed to be. So I even posed a question to a sister one time, what is a real woman? And the first thing they did was deflect and say, see, that's what I'm talking about. A man operating his masculine energy wouldn't even be concerned about a real woman, because he would know what a real woman is. But the bottom line is, I have not yet heard any woman tell me what a real woman is. You seem to be expert on what men are, but not so on what women are. And when men start to talk about the things they see and don't like in women, we get cast aside. Like, we get literally verbally and sometimes seriously castrated. Eunuchs. Functional, strong eunuchs is what, like, out there, you know, is what's preferred. So, and just to tap on that, just on that for a second, as brothers, we know a lot more about women than women know about us. Because we've been raised in a matriarchal society where we had to pay attention to every detail of what a woman was, how to please a woman. And I'm not just talking sexually speaking. How to cater to women. How to recognize a woman's mood swings. We've been taught so much that women now assume that all men should be mind readers. Because we've been around you so much that we should have absorbed who you are. But most, you know, you know, in terms of like some type of psychokinetic, you know, thing. So I came up with this, right? And just bear with me for a second. I think the ladies are right. Proper leadership of men will make them fall in line. I mean, like, take the military, for instance. They have leadership. They have structure. They get commitments for decades, in most cases, and for those who actually respond correctly to the leadership. However, the military also has contingencies for those who are undisciplined, lack accountability, plan mutinies, and can't hack. Some are reprimanded, some are removed, some are even detained. Some who can't survive the rigorous standards either wash out, go AWOL, or get dishonorably discharged. All eventually get replaced with younger, better versions of themselves. In other words, let's agree that as men, what this patriarchal leadership looks like, if implemented, it casts aside anyone who cannot properly follow the leadership that is asked for. So I say, as men, we need to do that. We need to get on code with each other as black men, create a leadership structure, create a set of values and a set of virtues that need to be adhered to. And if those who are supposed to fall in line with their femininity natural, when this natural leadership appears, can't comply, can't conform, can't submit, well, let's look at this analogy from the perspective as if we were shipmates and we were on a voyage. And black men were the captain of the ship. They're captain of the ship. And somebody is causing disturbance because they can't follow the rules of the ship. That person typically gets reprimanded some way, somewhere, somehow. They typically get sent to the brig first if the violation is such a breach or agreed. So basically, they get sent to jail. If they don't get sent to jail because of violence and they're out here and they're trying to conspire against the leadership and they're actually conglomerating with others and, you know, forming mutinies on board. Once we bring the mutiny to a heel, those who are responsible, especially consider maritime law, old maritime laws anyway, those responsible would have to walk the plank in the shark-infested waters. Now, I'm not saying we harm anybody, right? That's just uncivilized. But what I do say is we start to excise people, excise those who say they want proper leadership, but they're not designed to follow. And then we bring in a younger, fresher, more ready, more moldable, more shapeable, because molding people is not a bad thing. That's what governments do. It's called creating a path of least resistance. And molding those who will conform to the leadership that we create. And for all others, we want to treat this like Wakanda. We're going to put up that force shield. And you're not allowed to come by. You're not allowed to pass. You don't meet the standard. Because what's not being said is that of all men, black men have the lowest standard in regards to gender bonding with women of the other, you know, people of the other gender, the lowest expectations. We just want to be treated nice. All other people from pedigree, they want a submissive from day one, and they don't have any problem disciplining their women. Let me tell you a joke that goes around on white Reddit. And this is not from me, this is not from black men, this is from white men. And the joke goes as follows. What do you say to a woman that has two black eyes? The response, nothing. You already told her twice. See, that's not acceptable in the black community, and I'm not even endorsing that. But this is what I'm saying. You wonder why those women follow their man, because those men handle their communities with iron fist. And oftentimes they might have a velvet glove. Many times they do not. So I hope you all enjoyed this broadcast, this week's broadcast of Office Hours with your good brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I look forward to seeing, having much more interaction. And until next Friday. See you again. All right, good brother Lester, take us home.
Our next guest is really, really, really a spectacular individual, and he's real smooth, so I'm taking lessons from him. You know, when you get older, you want to be like a cat like this. It's my great pleasure to introduce Chicago's very own Oscar Brown Jr.
Apologize for being black, for all I am plus all I lack. Please, sir, please, ma'am, give me some slack, cause I apologize. I apologize for being poor, for being sick and tired and so. Since I ain't slick, don't know the score, I do apologize. I apologize because I bear resemblance most black people share. Thick lips, flat nose, and nappy hair. Yes, I apologize. I apologize for how I look, for all the lows and blows I took. On those, Lord knows I'd close the book as I apologize. I apologize for all I gave, for letting you make me your slave and go into my early grave. Yes, I apologize. I apologize for being caught, for being sold, for being bought, while being told I count for naught. Yeah, I apologize. I apologize for all I've done, for all my toil out in the sun. Don't want to spoil your righteous fun, so I apologize. I apologize and curse my kind for being fooled, for being blind, for being ruled and in your bind. Yes, I apologize. I apologize and curse my fate for being slow, for being late, because I know it's me you hate. Why not apologize? I apologize and tip my hat, because you so rich and free and fat, son of a bitch, that's where it's at, and I apologize.
There's too many of you crying. There you have it. Professor Carl Tone Jones doing it again. Your man Lester Kenyon right here at FetLifeStation.com. Enjoy the rest of your evening. You know we've got
to
find a
way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, oh, what's going on. Oh, but who are they to judge us?
simply cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh. Right on. Right.